Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances, check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those new year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model, offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Mid-Atlantic Outdoorsman Podcast. Today is April 30th, 2025, as I record this intro. And I'm having my buddy Mike on today. He's been on the show before. It's Mike Rebert out of Pennsylvania. I hope I said his last name right that time. I usually mess it up. I think I usually say Rebert. I think I said that for like the first three times I had him on the show, and he never corrected me until like the third time. So just always said Rebert, but I think it's Rebert. So sorry if I got that wrong again, Mike, but I'm doing my best. Anyway, today's April 30th. We're in the midst of turkey season. Some folks in the Southeast would consider it late season. Some folks in the Northeast are just getting ready to open this weekend or in a couple days. So depending upon where you are, that's exciting, man. I've had a tough go at it this season. It's been a little tough, a little slower than normal for sure. I could tell you a couple of the factors that I think contributes to that, but I could be wrong and I'm not a biologist, so I'm just going to spare you my theories. But yeah, it hasn't been the most upbeat, action-packed season for me. I've only killed one turkey in Virginia, and yeah, just hasn't been on fire. But anyway, I'm headed northeast in about 2 weeks or so. Yeah, about exactly 2 weeks, I'll be headed to upstate New York to do some turkey hunting up there on some private ground. I've got 500 acres to my disposal, split up between five tracks, so enough to have some fun. I've hunted it before, got on some birds there before, so should be promising. I'm also excited for, I think it's, the cutoff is either noon or 1 p.m. in New York, and after the cutoff, I'll be doing some deer scouting. I deer hunted there last year. If you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you probably heard my story from last year. I went to New York for 4 days and tagged out with a bow, but tagged out up there is one doe and one buck. And had a really good time there deer hunting. The best time I've ever had deer hunting, honestly. It was so fun. That place is so dense with deer that like you just can't not have fun. And the habitat's so cool. It's just, maybe it's just because it's so different than what I'm used to, but it was a really good time and I'm looking forward to going back. So I'll be turkey hunting it in 2 weeks, and I'll be doing some deer scouting in the afternoons. I'll be putting some cameras out and all that good stuff. So that's going to be a fun trip. I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, so today I've got Mike on. We're going to talk about a couple of things. Number one, I'm going to give you the breakdown of my Virginia public land hunt from this year with the turkey I harvested and kind of go over the story of how that went down. It was a quick hunt, awesome hunt, pretty much most ideal turkey hunt you could ask for. And that was awesome. So we're going to cover that. And then the second part of this show, we're going to be talking about the forest fires in the Michaux State Forest in Pennsylvania. If you're not familiar, just hop on Google, type in Michaux State Forest Fire. It'll pop right up. I mean, huge. There's one really big fire, like almost 3,000 acres, and another one that I think is close to 500 now. I have not checked any updates on it today, but Mike has a hunting cabin in the Michaux State Forest. He's very familiar with the state forest. He's deer hunted there for years. And anyway, we kind of just covered the updates of what's going on with that forest fire, the containment of it, maybe what started it, stuff like that. So it was a good episode that Mike and I recorded, and hope you guys enjoy it. See you guys next week. Mike, what's up, buddy?
What's going on, man?
Dude, living, drinking a beer, talking to you.
Same.
Sitting in my office. This is the first podcast I've recorded at my house in like a month.
You've been a busy guy.
Yeah. Hey, that echo on your side is actually pretty bad now. You think you can turn it down just a touch or something?
All right, talk to me. See what you got.
Does that sound better? Yeah, I can't hear it. Okay. Anyway, yeah, dude, this is like the first podcast I've recorded at my house in probably like a month. Just because I've been all over the place and either recording from my camper on the side of a mountain in a hotel room or something like that for the last like 4 weeks.
Yeah. I've been listening to all your shows and I think you recorded on a mountain. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, it was cool. It was like definitely the coolest place I've ever recorded one. I should have recorded one while I was in West Virginia, but we were just... The grind was so real in West Virginia. And we walked 11 miles one day. And it said, like, I was checking my phone at the end of the day, and it said, like, 75 floors climbed, 11.4 miles, 22,000 steps or something like that. And, like, by the end of the day, we would just, like, eat. And then there was a creek, like, right down from where we camped, and we'd, like, bathe in that creek.
Yeah, usually you and then go to, a good bit when you're on the road. And I didn't hear from you like one time you were in West Virginia.
I wasn't thought we were getting live, dude.
Yeah. Well, I also just didn't have any service where we camped. Usually if I stay up high, you know how it is hunting the mountains. Like usually if you're up high, you get pretty decent service. But that whole mountain was just none. No service.
No service. So which terrain would you say was like Georgia or West Virginia? I guess those are the two like recent hunts that you've done that have serious mountains, right? Mm-hmm. Which one was worse, you think? Or about the same?
I think about the same. They were both brutal. I just covered more ground when I was in West Virginia, but not for any particular reason. We killed opening morning in Georgia, and then the next day it was super slow. And then I ended up leaving early because there was like a monsoon, and so I just left. And then hunted Virginia. I did kill a Virginia turkey, finally. I know you've already heard most of that story, but...
Yeah, dude, congrats. You're going to have to share that with the listeners, yeah?
Yeah, that was a... It's been a slow season, man. It really has, like, for me, anyway. Somebody might be listening to this that's on fire, but not me. Like, and most of the people I've talked to in the general vicinity of the area that I hunt have had the same story. Like, just slow. Like, not a lot of talk on the ground, not a lot of, like, I bet I've struck like three birds this year, like actually walking around mid-morning, calling and striking. I bet I've struck three turkeys. And last year, by April 28th, I bet I'd have struck 22 turkeys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, not saying I'm, dude, I couldn't tell you, be honest with you. I really couldn't tell you. I just don't know. And I've gotten the same report from a lot of people. I don't think it's like a lack of having long beards because like preseason, my buddy Adam and I, he's on the show all the time. We'll ride around and listen and kind of take an inventory. And like preseason, we had like an inventory of 20 some odd turkeys within or on adjacent properties to the areas that we lease in our hunt club. And we've killed three at the hunt club. And last year, this time, as a group, we had killed 14. Same group hunting, the same spots, hunting them the same way we always hunt them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like that's like kind of our average, 14, 15 a year. This year, three. And they were all at them. I didn't even kill my turkey at the hunt club. I killed mine on the public land right down the road from the hunt club because I just got so frustrated with the slowness. At the lease, I guess. And so I was like, well, there's 40,000 acres of public ground down the street, and I'm sure I can find one there. It's phenomenal habitat. They do a great place managing it and stuff. But anyway, it is pretty crowded. There's a lot of folks in there, and I don't want to give too much details about it because I don't want to tell where it is. But anyway, they, I went in there the night. After I had the worst day I'd had of the season so far at the lease, like took my buddy came up. He drove like 3 hours, come home with me. He's like brand new to turkey hunting. And we're at the lease and didn't hear a single gobble in the limb. And I had chased a turkey around the day before on this one chunk and he was gobbling on the ground a good, okay amount, like once every 30 minutes or so, he would just pow, just rip one off. But he wasn't gobbling, responding to calls. He wasn't like shot gobbling. He was just random gobbling on his own. And he would do it. And then he would be another 100 yards down this bottom. And then he would gobble. And then he'd be another 100 yards back the way he came. And then he would gobble. And he just kind of hung out in this bowl that was in this pine stand. And he was in there all day. I chased him till 11. Kept trying to get around sides of that bowl. Everything short of diving in there with him and spooking him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Tried calling him up. Tried sitting quiet on him. Tried different approaches. Hunted him for 2 days. So on day three, my buddy shows up and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to be honest with you. It's been pretty slow at the lease. Like, it's not been great. It's like, there's one turkey that I've been chasing a bit and we can go hunt him. And if not, we're going to go to the public ground. And he was like, okay, yeah, cool. So instead of like standing at the road, listening to this turkey gobble, listening to him fly down and then him getting to that bowl like he had for the last 2 days. I just got to that bowl in the dark and I was like, I'll just hang out here. I don't even know if I'll call. I'm just going to be here because I know this is where he wants to be. Didn't even hear him gobble on the limb, but I was like, I'm not losing hope. We're going to sit tight for a while. And we sat in there for an hour or so, never heard from him, called, nothing. And I was like, well, like, would he stop, like, to cease to exist? Like, you know, right. Just so frustrating. So, so I was like, all right, I'm going to strike one up. It's like 9 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock, something like that. Good time to strike one. And we walked like 8 miles, walked the perimeter of 4 different properties, which, like, we're walking the perimeter of 4 of our properties that border several other properties. So I don't know how many properties I called into in that 8 mile hike. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did not strike one turkey. And I was like, golly, dude, this is rough. And so my buddy, who's, you know, never turkey hunted, he's tagging along with me, and I'm thinking, he's probably never going to turkey hunt again. He probably thinks this is so stupid. He's like, so you just walk around and make noises? Like,
oh, it's a good sound.
It is a great sound.
What are you drinking?
Bush lattes.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, cheers, brother.
Cheers.
Did you get a hold of any of the collectible cans at all? They do, like, the collectible cans.
I guess this is one. It's got a bass on it.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It says collector's edition on it.
Yes, sir.
That's pretty cool.
I bought this case from my buddy. He was house sitting when I went to somewhere. I don't know. And I left him like a 30 rack in the fridge, and I think he drank like 2 of them. And then he left the rest of it in there. So I was like, sweet.
Wouldn't be a podcast if we weren't drinking beer.
Yeah, no doubt.
Or whiskey.
So anyway, it was a terrible day of turkey hunting. And so I told my buddy Ken, I was like, man, he only had one more day with me. He only had 2 days. And I was like, we're going to go to the public land. I was like, because I just want you to at least experience what, like, a turkey hunt is supposed to be like. Even if we don't kill one, you just need to at least hear some, like, get to cover ground, like, somewhere, you know, where we can strike one up. There's a plethora of turkeys on that public ground. It's fairly pressured, but there was an area of the public that had not been opened since the season started, and it had only been open for 2 days. The other half of the public had been open since opening day, so I wasn't going to bother with that. I went to the area that just opened. At this point, it had been open for, this would be the 3rd day when we went in there. And we went in the night before just to scout, just driving around. And this food plot, like I said, they do a lot of management. They've got a ton of food plots. Did I say this food plot the first time? This piece of public land is what I meant to say. This piece of public land has food plots galore. They manage it really well. And there's a clover food plot that you can, like, see from the road. Not a place where you would think you'd kill a public land gobbler. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you drive past this thing and it's 160 yards out your window. And it's small too. It's like less than an acre, a little teeny food plot. And I was driving by, it was like 6:15-ish, 6:30-ish in the evening. And Ken's like, there's a turkey. And so I throw the binos up real quick, and sure enough, it's a longbeard. And so I'm like, all right, that's a good place to start in the morning. We had dropped a pin like probably 200 or 300 yards down from that. On a high point, we were going to listen to a creek bottom that runs back behind that little food plot. And the food plot itself was already at a high point. So I said, well, hell, there's one right there in that food plot. And he's probably not going to go far, you know, being that it's already 6:30. It's only an hour till dark. I figured he would take off into that creek. The creek's only like 220 behind the food plot. So I'm like, he'll probably roost in there, you know, and we'll stand in the food plot, hear him gobble in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started there. It's like blowing 31 miles an hour, of course. I'm like, this is my buddy Ken. He's going to hate turkey hunting once again. I'm like, he's not having a good time. He's no way we're going to hear one if he's like less than 100 yards away, you know, or more than 100 yards away. And we're standing in that food plot just inside the woods. I'm like leaned up against a white oak. This place is full of hardwoods, dude. It's so pretty.
So anyway, is this the same night, right?
This is the next morning.
Now the next morning?
Yep. Yeah, this is the next morning. We're going in to hunt the turkey. What's that?
I must have missed that part. Go ahead. Continue.
Maybe I didn't mention it. But anyway, yeah, so the next morning we go in to hunt the turkey. And I'm leaned up against a tree. It's like 6:15. Haven't heard anything yet. Owl hooted. Nothing. Owl hooted a little louder. Nothing. And then I catawalled on the owl tube. Pow! I heard one off to my right. And I'm like, my buddy Ken, I had him run across the food plot to the other side to listen from that side, just because, you know, like, it's so windy, you're not going to be able to hear very far.
Right.
And there was separate drains that went off the east and west side of the food plot that went down to that creek. And so I was like, in case the turkeys roosted off the other drain, he'll hear them from over there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I call him. Did you hear him? He's like, no. I'm like, all right, well, get over here. He's on this side. He said, okay. So he runs over and we dive into the woods. Well, I say dive into the woods. We went 10 feet into the woods. And I said, he's right here somewhere within 100 and some change is what I assumed. And I was like, I'm going to owl hoot again and check him. And I owl hooted again and he gobbled. And it was like, sure enough, like that's sub 100 yards. Like he's right here somewhere. And so there's like a white oak, another white oak, and a big mature pine with a bunch of underbrush like that almost went around it in a circle, like a perfect natural blind, like 10 foot in the wood, inside the woods off of this food plot. And I'm like, sure enough, this gobbler is roosted like on the edge of the food plot just inside the woods, you know? And so we get down and I said, we got to crawl to these trees right here.
Right.
And so we crawl up to that little setup and sit down. I'm kind of nervous at this point because he gobbles like right before we set up. And I was like, man, he is close. But like, we got to get in this setup. We don't have another option. And I was afraid he was going to see us setting up. So we crawled and eased around the tree, got in a setup. And we're sitting there. He hadn't gobbled in a minute. So that's making me nervous. Like he saw us setting up. So I just very carefully slipped my owl hooter tube out of my vest, get it to my mouth, and just went. And that was it. And he pow. And I was like, oh, we're clean. We're good. He has no idea we're in the world. Dropped the owl hooter on the ground, which I had to go back and get later because I forgot it. And then got right. He gobbled a handful of times. And then I just did like two little pop, pop, small clucks. And he pow, cut me off, gobbled towards me. Continued facing away from me after that, though. And he's gobbling like facing this creek bottom. And he gobbled for a while. And then I pop, pop, yep, 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 real soft. And I watched this turkey jump limbs, spin 180 degrees on the tree to face me. And then he goes into strut in the tree. Didn't gobble at me that time, but he just strutting, staring at me.
That's crazy.
And then he just stood there for 25 minutes. He would just go into half strut, come out of it, go into half strut, come out of it. And he just did that for, God, it felt like forever. He stopped gobbling after that. And he just did that. And I'm just, you know, coaching Ken along like, dude, do not move. Like, I forgot to mention at this point, I can see the turkey in the tree, obviously.
Right.
But before I saw him jump the limb and start strutting, I had found him like with my eyes. Like, you see, he'd been gobbling so much and we'd sat there a while. I was like, I told Ken, I said, I'm looking at a turkey. I don't know if it's the gobbler, but I'm looking at a turkey 100% up in that tree about 75 yards. And then he gobbled, and I watched his body move, and I said, yep, that's the gobbler. And then when I called to him, which was a little crazy because I could see the turkey, so calling to him is a little risky for sure. Mm. Like, I'm sure some people listening are probably going to be like, whoa, what'd you do that for? But I just, the way he was facing away, gobbling into that creek bottom, I was so confident he was going to pitch down into that creek. And with the wind speeds that day, it was going to be so tough to catch back up with him. So I just, pop, pop, yep, yep, yep. And that's when he spun on the limb and started strutting, staring at me. Then I was confident, like, okay, he's going to fly down to us. And then 25 minutes of silence and half strutting in and out on the limb. And he pitched down. And I called to him one more time while he was in flight. And he landed in the bottom. And he came right up the hill. And he stopped at about 31. And that's where I killed him. It was right there. I mean, just perfect. Didn't have a clue in the world we were there. And just an awesome hunt, man. I was pumped.
It was a beautiful bird, so. Man. That picture that you guys took that was a gorgeous picture. Sun was just coming up. Like, it was
yeah.
Perfect picture, man. He sent it to me, and I was like, that's a nice bird. That was a long beard, too. Like,
he did have a long beard on.
Super long.
It's like 11 and some change. I don't really measure turkey stuff too much, but I did measure his beard just because my buddy even mentioned. He was like, dude, that's a really long beard, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good, man. I was happy. A lot of fun. Good hunt. It's like really, that's, I only had like three super exciting hunts this year. Four. Georgia, West Virginia, that one, and then one other one in Virginia that didn't quite work out.
But what happened in West Virginia that was so exciting? Heard you already talk about that on the show.
No, I haven't. I'll probably do a whole episode on it, but we had a turkey on the ground that I bet he gobbled 250 times in 2 hours. It was insane. Like, never seen anything like that in my life. And it was open country. It's just, wow, man, I don't want to give away too much about the spot, but it's really open. You can see a long ways. Mm-hmm. And this, I could see the turkey at 250 yards on the next ridge on the other side from us. And I'm just watching him just pow, 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 pow for an hour. Like, it was nuts, dude. I'm like, it was like hunting a turkey in a field, like the way he was acting. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen him hang up in fields and do that, but this turkey was, you know, in a mountain and just lighting it up, dude. It was nuts. It was really, really, really cool. But we did call that turkey up and we missed him. But
oh, man. Yeah, that sucks, dude.
We called him up four times, and every time he would hang up around 80 yards. Around 80 yards, he would hang up, and then we wouldn't kill him. And then he would ease back off, and then we would ease up to where we had just called him from. And then we would call again, and we'd call him in again. And we did that four times. And I don't really like to hunt like that, to be honest with you. I usually like to, if the turkey eases off, I like to go around them and get in front of them on the other side. Like, even if I have to go a half mile out of my way, I'll go around them and get in front of them and then call to them just to kind of throw them off.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm already in the direction they're traveling, you know. But as open as the country was in West Virginia, that was not an option. Like, you just... That's not at all an option.
Right.
So, yeah, it was tough, but yeah. No, it's been good, man. It's been good. This turkey season feels like it's like going really fast. Like, the green up seems like it's earlier than it is. Is it like that where you're at? Is it super green?
Yeah. Sorry, dude. My dog's going nuts upstairs, so just ignore.
Oh, that. No, you're good. I can't even really hear it.
Yeah,
I can hear it a little bit, but it's not like bothersome.
So what's on your agenda for your next turkey hunt?
New York.
You still got New some tags over there in Virginia?
Yeah, I don't think I'll hunt in Virginia anymore the rest of the year. I've only got – I go back to work tomorrow. My vacation's over. And with my schedule, I've got like one big set of days off, and it's like May 13th through the 20th or something like that. And I'll be in New York. I'm going to hunt New York, and then that'll be the conclusion of my turkey season. So,
right.
But it's been good, man. I've been having fun. I hope New York's on fire. I really do. I'll be honest with you, and this ain't like me, and you know that, but I've already been getting excited for deer season a little bit, man. Like,
oh, dude, that's all I've been thinking about. I don't want to rush summer, you know, but
I do.
As soon as it starts getting nice out, I like to, you know, come home, shoot the bow, and just think about deer. Like, I've already been starting to watch deer hunting videos on YouTube, like, constantly, you know. And that's usually something that you don't start doing until it's, like, a month out of the season, just to get that, like, anticipation, you know.
Yeah.
I've been, like, I don't know what it is, but I'm so ready for deer season.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I don't know if it's just because I didn't have like the most action packed turkey season, or if it's just like a switch flip this year, or like maybe because the green up so early with the weather we've had, it does seem like it greened up really early. And usually like the summertime, you know, is for most people, myself included, it's like when I do my most prep work for deer season, like shooting the bow, getting in shape, building arrows, whatever. All that kind of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, anyway, I'm just fired up this year, man. Also, I'm going back to New York, which was the most fun deer hunting trip I've ever taken last year. And I'm bringing a buddy along with me this year, which will make it twice as fun, you know?
Right. Yeah. So you're going to go up there and turkey hunt, or are you going to go up there and scout for deer the whole time?
I'm a turkey hunt. You know, you can only hurt turkey hunt till noon or one or something like that anyway, state of New York. Right. So it's kind of perfect. I've actually got a spot. I am going to hang a stand while I'm there. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm hanging a lock on stand.
I don't blame you.
That spot where I got busted last year,
mm-hmm.
by that real big one. I'm going to try to hang a hang on stand in there. And I'm going to also cut down like some form of pine or cedar or something. And I'm going to find a way to fasten that sucker up in that apple tree that I climbed behind me so I can have some cover right there. Because that spot is just, it's the only tree you can climb to hunt that whole thing. It's the only option. And like, I have to hunt it. It's the coolest spot I've ever deer hunted in my life. And so I got to find a way to create cover right there. You know what I'm saying? Because there just is none.
Right.
So open.
You got a whole 500 acres over there, right?
Yeah, 500 acres 500 myself, acres. Man. It's not bad.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it's five tracks.
You have a good idea where you're going to turkey hunt when you go there? Or are you just going to start from scratch?
Yeah. Last year, I turkey hunted it. And let me think. There was two properties that were really hot. One of them was really fun. If you're just looking to have like a really fun, cool morning. It's only a 75 acre chunk. It's a small property. And there's two hedgerows on the property, and they border like it borders a bunch of other properties with big fields and hedgerows. And we sat in the hedgerow the first morning just because it was the highest point. And I just figured we'll just listen from right here. And so we tucked in that hedgerow, my wife and I, and we were listening. You know, I bet we heard 17 or 18 different birds from right there. And I was like, this is going to be a wild morning, whether or not we kill, you know, because we only got this small chunk, but we're going to see and hear turkeys all morning. It was also opening day. They hadn't been pressured at all. And they flew down, and I mean, I bet we saw five or six different gobblers that morning. With the way the terrain is out there, it's ag country and it's rolling hills. You can see for a literal mile if you're on a high point, you know, with all that ag. And so like some of the gobblers we saw were 800-900 yards away, but we saw so many. And then there was five that were hard gobbling. Well, one that was hard gobbling that sounded like he was with a group of jakes, four other ones. And they were down in the bottom, like 500 yards below us and the neighbors. And I'm telling my wife, I'm like, man, I think that's a group of jakes, but it certainly sounds like one of them is a gobbler. But chances are it's a jake that has a full gobble, you know? And we called them all the way across the neighbor's pasture to about 10 yards as they crossed in the hedgerow. And I was just counting them. Because I knew how many I had heard, you know, and it was five, and I'm counting them as they cross. I'm like, one Jake, two Jake, three Jake, four, five Jakes. Okay. And they were all Jakes. And then we just took a little video, called to them, made them gobble and stuff, and then watched them ease off into our woods. But that was the only gobbler we got on that property. I probably won't start there. If I was going to take somebody who had never turkey hunted before, I'd probably go there. Just because they'd have a really fun time. And we did see a longbeard in that field feeding the evening prior, which is why we went there to hunt. I just think he had crossed the hedgerow, went across the pasture, and roosted on a neighbor's property. Because I didn't hear any gobble on our actual property that morning. And the woods on that property are like, I bet it's 5 acres. There's not much woods to work with right there at all.
Really?
Yeah. But he's got another chunk that's got a huge chunk of timber, big old chunk of timber, and a mile long field. And that spot we got on several gobblers. And then there's another farm that's got like five little parcels of timber that kind of border around the property. And then it's like really steep rolling hills, big pastures. And that property was loaded. There was like three or four on that. And that's a lot for it to be only like, property's probably 180 acres or so. And there was like three or four using it. One pair and then two separate gobblers that were on the opposite sides of the property. And we actually called two of them up to about 10 steps and got busted just because we didn't get to a good enough setup in time. They just charged us. But I'll probably start there. And that's actually the same property that I killed my buck when I deer hunted it last year. And it's about the exact same spot where I called the gobblers up. It's about the, like almost on the up to the T where I killed my buck, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we got something else to talk about. Your freaking state forest is burning down, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's not good. It's not good. I mean, so far from what I've been getting with all the updates and stuff, they got it somewhat contained. But yeah, Metro State Forest is currently on fire.
Yeah, it looks like the updates I were reading, it looks a lot like it's a way better off than it was.
Yeah.
When you called me the first time, you were pretty bent out of shape when you called me the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, it was right close to your cabin. It was right close there to one of the fires, wasn't it?
Right. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, I was looking at it on a map. Mike's driving and I'm reading the updates. And he's like, "You read me the updates on driving?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." I'm like, being optimistic. I'm like, "Oh, dude, it's probably fine. Nowhere near your cabin." And I pull it up and I'm like, "Oh, dude, it's like at his cabin." I'm like, this isn't good at all. And then I'm reading the updates and it's like, go ahead, sorry.
And on Friday, like when we had this conversation, I was at work and I looked over at my coworkers. I was like, "I gotta go, like right now." And they're like, what's going on? I'm like, "You know, like the fires that are going on up in Pennsylvania right now." Everyone's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Yeah, like I got a cabin there. I gotta go. Like if worst comes to worst, I need to at least try to get everything I can get out of my cabin so it doesn't burn to the ground." But
yeah, no kidding.
And then when I was talking to you, you're like, "You can't go there, dude. You will die if you go there." This is like so smoky. You call me, you're like, "Dude, your state's making my whole state smoky. So what's going on?" And I'm just like,
Yeah. I walked outside a turkey hunt. It was hazy and it smelled like a campfire. So I figured like there's a pine stand locally that was burning or something. And I pull up the news and it was like, there was a wildfire in New Jersey and then there was a wildfire in Pennsylvania. And it said northeast winds pushing smoke into southeastern Virginia. And I was like, "Well, dadgum." And that's when you called me. You sent me a photo of the fire that you got off the news or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "Golly, that thing is rolling."
Yeah, it was huge. I think overall, like, so there's two fires. There's the Thompson Hollow fire, which is a good ways away. And you know, that one's the biggest. But the one that's really close to the cabin is Hammond's Rock. And that one was still at 500 acres last time I checked. 497. So you might as well just call five. But the
when did you check that?
This morning I got an update. I guess like they're the senator or something. He's been going there and like getting updates and like keeping everybody posted. And I also have like a Facebook group that I follow along with a lot of the cabin owners and camp owners up there. They all have kind of been putting updates up on the Facebook page and stuff. But yeah, as of this morning. At least the last update that I had gotten, which was about 6 hours ago, so was that the Thompson Hollow fire was 2,248 acres burnt.
Jesus.
And then the Hammond's Rock is 497. So
dang, that's about double what the Hammond's Rock was when I last checked.
When we talked on Friday, it was like less than 200.
200 and some change. Yeah, because it was significantly smaller than the Thompson Hollow. It still is significantly smaller than the Thompson Hollow fire, but yeah, that's wild, man.
Yeah. And like when I was coming home on Friday, so I live about, I don't know, 60 miles south or so from the Metro State Forest, which is part of the Appalachian Mountains. And so it's probably like the biggest mountain range south of Pennsylvania. So when you're coming into Pennsylvania, you can get some views of it when you're coming in from Maryland. I work in Maryland. And, usually you can kind of like see the mountain range way off in the distance, but Friday it was like, you couldn't see anything. It was so hazy that way.
Jeez.
And, I was like, man. And then I get on Facebook and all you see is just like videos and pictures. Like it looks so bad on the videos and the pictures.
Yeah.
But, and you pull up Onyx and it'll show you like where the hotspots are.
Yeah. I didn't know you could do that until this occurrence. Like it's a pretty cool feature.
Yeah, man. It's a pretty cool feature. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just constantly getting on Onyx throughout the entire weekend and just checking.
I'm gonna pull it up right now and look. Let me see here.
Yeah, last I checked, it's pretty well contained. I think they said the Hammonds, well, Thompson Hollow, the bigger fire of the two, the 2,200 acre fire, was 42% contained, whatever that means.
Yeah. So this one says, Hammond's Rock, Estimated current acreage is 470. Percent contained 92%.
Right. Yep.
I don't do wildland firefighting. I do structural firefighting. So I don't know exactly what that means. I wish I could give you a better synopsis. I guess, probably
like,
has something to do with like the perimeter. Golly, that Thompson Hollow fire is huge, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It is so big.
Yeah, like the videos and the pictures that I saw online were just like basically an entire mountain. Like you just see the entire mountain burning.
Yeah, what's crazy is you can see where it perfectly borders that creek. The backside, it would be the west side of the Thompson Hollow fire. It like perfectly borders the, let me see here, Chambersburg Reservoir. And I don't know if that's because they're like pumping out of that or if the fire couldn't jump that or whatever.
Yeah, like helicopters dipping into all the reservoirs. There's like three or four reservoirs up there within close proximity of those fires. And they were,
it's pretty wild, dude.
Dipping out of them with helicopters. And, you know, problem is that when they're at high altitude like that, there's no like great water source.
Yeah, that Hammond's Rock fire is like on the knob. I'm looking at it right here. It's like at the very top. I guess the Thompson Hollow fire kind of is too. I'm actually looking at it right now.
They did say this morning that it was like they were worried about, I guess today was a pretty hot day and pretty low humidity, at least here. And they were kind of worried about it. Kind of, because like I said, they don't have it out yet. It's still burning 92% contained. I don't know if that means they got like a perimeter set up around it and they're just kind of like hoping it doesn't go within outside of that perimeter.
Right.
Or what, but.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. I don't do wildland firefighting where I'm at. It's very urban. So it's like we call fire control on the radio when the fire is out. 100% out. And until it's out, it's considered a working incident. So like, be on the radio and you'll say like engine 11 Norfolk, so this is a working incident. And then like when it's out, engine 11 command, we got fire control. There's no like, all right, it's 78% contained. Like I don't know what that means. What that means. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I did see on like the Facebook page or the group or news or something. Somebody posted, I guess, about there's been like an uptick in like seeing wildlife in the more urban areas surrounding the state forest. And obviously they're trying to relocate. So like they don't want to be within that smoky, fiery mess. So
yeah, for sure.
They're like relocating and people got, you know, bears coming through their backyard and deer and.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah. So it's
got nowhere to go. Yeah. It's like, you know, a lot of state biologists, wildlife management areas, national forests, stuff like that, they'll do prescribed burnings. And usually it's on a smaller scale, you know, 100 acres or so. Mm-hmm. It'll be like a big one, you know. And they do say, I mean, if you talk to the state biologist that like knows a thing or two, they do say that fire during growing season is more productive for early like successional growth.
Right.
Yeah, than dormant season fire. The downside is frying a lot of turkey eggs. I don't know how many turkey eggs would be that high up on the mountain because there's not, I'm assuming it's not as thick up on the higher side of the mountain as it would be where it's lower, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which most of your turkey nests are going to be in the thicker cover. So hopefully it didn't fry too many turkey eggs, but on the bright side, there will be tons of early successional growth probably within a month of them getting that fire completely out.
Yeah, that's the only exciting part about it is, I mean, you know, I hope nobody's house burns down. And from what I've heard is that, you know, a couple of people evacuated their properties and stuff, but no one was like it wasn't made mandatory by anybody. It didn't really get, I guess, close enough to people's homes and stuff for them to like, hey, you guys got to leave. I think
eventually
it was just smoky, right? But
yeah,
up on those mountains, there's really no camps too close to the fire where they would like have to knock on your door and be like, hey, you gotta get out of here right now. But so like luckily nobody's was injured. There's no reported injuries or casualties or anything like that. That's good, man. I did some pictures and like of the areas that were burnt and put out. And man, from the pictures that I saw, it looks like it that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like a prescribed burn. Like it didn't really burn all of the big mature timber, like living timber. It kind of just burned all the undergrowth and the dead fuel that was on the ground.
Yeah.
And so like when you see the picture, I think I sent you one yesterday. It was like,
yeah,
it just looks like wide open hardwoods now, you know? And like, that's
it's
kind of exciting.
With all that leaf litter burned off, I mean, it will allow the forest to breathe a lot, right? You know? And like, what time of year do you guys usually green up? Probably in like early May.
Oh, it's greening up now. Yeah.
Okay.
So like, I would say on the top of the tops of those mountains. I mean, I was up there scouting around about 2 weeks ago. And it seemed like everything up, you know, higher altitude was still a little dead. You know, obviously your valleys and stuff like that, they get a little more, they green up a little faster. But on the tops, there's still a lot. And, just from having a camp up there the past 5 years now, like most of the higher stuff, like the stuff in the higher tops of the mountains and stuff, like there's a lot of dead shit up there. I don't know why that is. Somebody might know better, but like the higher altitude stuff, I guess it just takes a little bit longer for it to green up. Maybe it's because.
Yeah. Like when I was just in West Virginia, it was at the tops, at the peaks, it looked like December, you know, right. Yeah. And then you drop down in the valleys and it looks like spring. Right. So I'm not a mountain guy. You know, if there's somebody that wants to tune in or shoot me an email or something and tell me like, why is it that the tops of the mountains green up last? Does it have to do with like oxygen deficiencies at a higher altitude or something? I don't know exactly why.
But I don't know. Maybe it's just because it's like, I don't know, under the sun all the time, you know?
Maybe. Yeah. I don't.
Not much
shade. I could tell you.
yeah, I couldn't tell you either, but.
I'm certainly not a biologist, but yeah, no. I will say once they get it all contained, like let's say if the fire was out today, they put it out today completely. I would bet within 2 weeks, those areas are going to be pretty daggum green, like with successional short growth, lots of food, lots of native foods, you know, and it'll provide habitat for a lot of critters for sure.
Right.
Good brooding habitat for turkey poults, good food for white-tailed deer, all kinds of stuff. I mean, if you're a turkey hunter and you've never hunted a prescribed burn area, you need to. It's pretty dang cool. Like, especially one that's like less than a year old, the successional growth will be like less than knee high. And it's just the prettiest, greenest, best looking growth in the forest. And turkeys and white-tailed deer just flock to it, man. It is really cool stuff. So I'll say like, if you can get up there and hunt that stuff, probably be, I don't know if I'm blowing up your secret spot. No, because
they do a lot of, they did a handful of prescribed burns up there already this year. So this is kind of an unfortunate event that happened that just added more to the acreage of prescribed burn areas up there. So it's not.
Yeah, like, I would imagine, I'm not a biologist. Again, I'm going to preface that by saying, but I would imagine it's probably for some, there's probably a good reason why they don't burn 3,000 acres at a time. You know what I mean?
Right.
And when they do these prescribed burns, they select areas and do smaller chunks of change. I don't know if that's just because of the practicality of it, the logistical reasons of it, or if there's like an actual biologic reason why you only burn small sections at a time. But I would be interested if I could get a hold of somebody to record a podcast with them, like whether it be one of the biologists at my show or like a biologist of anywhere that could shed some light on like what kind of impacts that would have on the wildlife. That'd be something really interesting to have a conversation about, like a burn of that size, you know?
Right.
I wonder if there's somebody I can reach out to get a connection like that to get somebody
like up
on
there
and talk
in Michelle. There's like, they don't let you just go in there and like log, like you're not allowed to just walk into the woods and find a deadfall and cut it up into firewood. You know, there's a lot of rules, around that type of stuff. And probably because of, you know, not only they don't want you to do it, but the fire hazards. I mean, having a decent amount of deadfall wood on the ground is also good for the, you know, the habitat and stuff like that.
Right. But, absolutely.
But I was also told a rumor that that's what started the fire to begin with. They're up there logging, especially in the Hammond's Rock area. I know that they're logging right now. I don't know how true this is. It's all speculation at this point, I guess. But
right.
I was told that, you know, a chainsaw might have sparked on something and it caused the fire, and it just grew, kept growing from there, and they didn't put it out.
Yeah, maybe.
But dude, I read a stat the other day.
For there to be two fires that far apart from each other, because the way the crow flies, I think they're at least 5 miles apart, I would say.
Yeah.
Just kind of,
oops.
It's kind of odd that there's two fires at the same exact time that far apart from each other, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I read a stat the other day when I was reading into about this fire. I started reading about wildfires in general. And a stat that I read said greater than 99% of wildfires are started by a person.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's pretty rare that a forest just spontaneously bursts into flames, you know? Well,
like this time of year, and I know during the dry months of the winter and stuff, they put a burn ban out where you're not allowed to have like campfires and stuff like that. Not saying that there's people out there that don't listen to that. But
I'm sure there is, but
yeah, there's definitely people out there, I'm sure, that still do, you know. And that's a big problem, you know, because for all we know, that's what started it too. So we just don't know. There's a lot of people wondering why there's two different fires in Michelle right now, burning this many acreage or this much acreage in two different areas.
Yeah, it's all speculation, you know. It could be arson, could be somebody flicked a cigarette, could be, like you said, logging equipment, could be, I guess, natural causes. You can't rule that out. You know, that's still an option, but who knows, man? It's just bizarre stuff. But yeah, hopefully everything turns out all right.
It sounds dropping like, right now, man. That's, I know you're like, oh, the turkey eggs. It's just, you're just like a big turkey fanatic, you know? I'm like, dude, there's fawns dropping right now. Like there's got to be.
No, absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You just got to think about how many, big bucks just got killed from that fire.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
Future big bucks, future, I should say.
Future hammers.
Yeah.
But man, crazy stuff. Crazy stuff.
But yeah, the camp's good. I'm going to make a trip up there, I guess, this weekend just to kind of check it out. And I know that they opened up a lot of the roads and stuff up there. So I'm like going to take a little stroll and walk around, and I'll definitely have some more to update you on throughout the week. But
yeah, I'm interested to hear, man. Especially once I get everything contained, you go up there and check that stuff out. I'm sure you won't be the only one. I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to go scoop it out.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
But yeah, it's crazy. Glad to hear that the cabin held up though. That's
great.
Cabin's
good, man. Yep, the cabin's good. Didn't get too close to the cabin. So, and like just the neighbors around my camp, you know, there's multiple cabins. I've spoken with them and they're, you know, they're good too. So nobody's camp burned down. Fires are somewhat contained. And, luckily for me, at least I'm south of those fires. So it seems like when they were growing to the north. I don't know if that's just cause that's the way the wind blows. And it's been super windy this spring. Like,
it has been
probably the windiest spring that I can think about in a long time, you know.
Actually, I read an infographic that said, I don't know about Pennsylvania, but as far as Virginia was concerned, it said it was the windiest spring, the windiest start to spring that we'd have in over 30 years.
Oh, I believe that. Yeah, it's been so windy.
That could be a big part to do why my turkey season hasn't been on fire. Just hard to hear a turkey gobble when it's blowing 32.
It's probably not as fun either, you know, just
no,
going out and hearing the wind howl all morning.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like turkey season when you're standing out there and it's cloudy and it's cold and the wind's howling. It's like, it just doesn't even, this feels like a great day to be like in a bottom somewhere trying to kill a big buck. doesn't really feel like a good day to call up a gobbler across a rye field, you know what I mean?
Right.
But oh yeah, man. It is I kind of winding down, kind of not. I mean, we still got all the northern states don't even really open until May. So,
yeah, we
didn't do any turkey
weekend.
Hunting?
We open this weekend.
What? Yeah.
Yep. Pennsylvania opens this weekend, I think Saturday. So, I'm going to give a college try. you know.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to College Try. I mean, this kind of put a burden on all my plans, though. You know, I don't really know what it's going to be like up there. I haven't been up there. Is it going to be smoky and just nasty and windy and a mess? Or it's going to be hard to get around because the roads are closed down in some areas? Or, I don't really know. It's a big state forest. It's like 85,000 acres altogether, I think. So I can definitely find some areas very far away from all those fires. But
oh, yeah.
But yeah,
maybe it'll push them all into some little pocket and you'll just be covered in turkeys.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. I have a buddy who's been going up. He works in that area a good ways away from the fire. So he wasn't scouting anywhere around theirs, but he did locate a bunch of turkeys. And for the listeners who don't know, I'm not a big turkey hunter, you know? So if I do kill a gobbler, that'll be my first one ever.
Yeah.
Kevin's been trying to, you know, trying to get me into it. And, I guess he's been doing somewhat of a good job.
But dude, I constantly send him stuff just trying to get him ramped up. Like,
yeah,
I had him watch Colonel and the Fox.
Yeah, that was a good documentary.
I was like, you got to watch this documentary, man. You're gonna learn a thing or two, and maybe it'll get you a little fired up, understand the culture a little better, you know?
Yeah,
but yeah, man,
it's a history class watching that.
Feels like yesterday I was at NWTF in February. In my camper, watching Colonel and the Fox with my wife, getting excited for turkey season. And now it's like April 28th, and I've only got one trip left.
And you're already thinking about deer season.
Huh?
And you're already thinking about deer season.
Which is out of the ordinary for me. I don't usually start thinking about deer season until like mid-June. I usually don't even take my bow off the rack until mid-June. I don't shoot it throughout the spring and stuff. You know, I turkey hunt with a shotgun. And
yeah, you sent me a Snapchat earlier. It was like your bow hanging up in your garage, and you were like, why am I thinking about shooting this right now?
Yeah, so dude.
Turkey hunting.
Yeah, I had a zoom past a turkey fan that I had hanging up to get to the bow in that video.
That a boy.
Yeah. Could be a really good season, man. Who knows? It's kind of funny. I was struggling so bad. It's like day four. This is still early into the season, but usually by day four, I've done like, you know, either killed a couple or like had some really action packed hunts that far into the season. Not that that's very far, but you know what I mean? I mean, I just wasn't hitting on much, and I'm walking around trying to strike one. I've done been to three properties. I'm on my third or fourth of the day walking, trying to strike one, trying to glass one. And I texted my buddy Adam. We were texting back and forth. He was struggling just as much. I shot him a text. It's like 11 a.m. Been turkey hunting all day. Hadn't heard one. I texted him and I said, maybe I'll kill a 180 this year. Just because, like, my turkey season has been such a drag.
You kill a 180, bro, I'll buy you freaking dinner and come stay in your camper with you for a week.
There you go.
You're gonna take me out where he shot that 180. You got 180 running around Virginia like that.
Dude, I will say, at my lease, 11 years ago, granted, but at my lease, 11 years ago, there was a guy that killed a 197.
Sheesh.
And that is an anomaly where I hunt. Like, that is a buck of a lifetime. Like, there's no way you can duplicate that.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's no way. Like, dude, killing a 200-inch southeastern Virginia deer is insane. Like, that is on hunt club ground in a county that runs dogs constantly. Like, that's nuts, dude. That buck just must have lived in like the smallest little hole, and the guy killed it with a bow.
That's crazy.
Killed it with a bow.
Good for him.
Yeah, that's
the way to do it.
Freaking nuts, dude. Like, couldn't believe it. He was an old member. He's not a member of the hunt club anymore, but anyway, yeah, that's pretty crazy. I went back there in that area where he killed it. I mean, granted, this is 10 years later, so it looks completely different than when he hunted it. It was young pines, thick undergrowth, and the neighbor's property was like a really fresh clear cut. And now it's our side is mature pines, and the neighbor's is like a quite overgrown clear cut, like limited maneuverable areas inside that clear cut for deer, other than like the exception of like the edges and the logging roads and around the creeks and stuff like that. Like most of it's like an impenetrable wall of 10-foot tall greenbrier thicket, you know. And I hunted at the transition from the pines to the neighbor's cutover and heard some chasing in the cutover. I hunted it for 2 days and that was it. I didn't even see a deer. So I think the time window for that area has passed. But yeah. I'm fired up though, man.
Yeah,
I'm fired up.
You better be fired up.
I'm trying to get fired up for this.
I'm trying to get fired up for turkeys. I'm trying to get fired up for turkeys, man. But you know, just all I can think about is putting an arrow through a deer and like getting down and picking that bloody arrow off the ground and giving a good whiff.
Oh, heck man. Yeah.
At first,
I'm fired up to go to New York and turkey hunt. I'm sure once I get there, step out of the truck and it's like starting to green up there, and like I hear one gobble, I'll be like, boom, right back in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll be good to go. But I am going to spend some time in the afternoons. I got 4 cameras I'm bringing. I'm going to put them out. I'm going to hang a stand and do some walking around, check some stuff out that piqued my curiosity.
This, like, you're going to find this giant shed on the ground right underneath that apple tree you're talking about.
And oh, dude, I should go over there and look for sheds.
Like, shit. Now I really want a deer hunt.
Dude, I should go over there and look for sheds around that apple orchard. I really should.
You should.
That's a good idea. When I go over there to drop a camera, I'm going to walk all up in that thing. Yeah. I bet you I'll find one. That's a good idea. Sure. I'm going to do that. Yeah. I'm going to do that. I found a couple last year when I was there turkey hunting. Just in the like open woods. I found a couple.
Yeah. But I remember.
One was a spike shed. Like this big. And the other one was like a 5-point side. Like pretty decent looking. And yeah. But yeah, no, it's still turkey season. Got to stay focused.
Yeah, I'm trying to get excited for it. You know, you Virginia boys don't trout fish or anything like that. So
no, I bass fish a little bit.
Yeah, we bass fish up here too.
I mean, cobia fish. I don't cobia fish as much as I used to, but I do cobia fish.
It's still cold up here. Like all the reservoirs and stuff, it's freezing cold, so it's hard to get. I like summer bass fishing where you can just like throw top water and get these big blow ups. It's really the only way I like to do it.
Oh yeah.
Trout fishing's super fun. It's what we do up here. And that opened up on April 5th and I've been doing a lot of that. I probably caught like over 100 trout already this year. So
yeah, I can't say I've ever done that.
It's a lot of fun. Especially if you have a good group of guys to go, you know, and then you guys go all get done fishing, catch your limits, get back to camp or do a big fish fry. It's a good time. Come out.
Sounds
come
like it, man. Yeah, that'd be great, dude. Especially in like the summertime or something.
Yeah.
Is it pretty good in the summer?
Yeah. I mean, they stock all year round. We do have a lot of native streams as well. They're a little further north. When the water gets pretty warm, the trout stay, and you know, if they can find a deep pocket somewhere, or if they have like a nice spring fed stream that stays fairly cold all summer long. But around here, South Pennsylvania, the water gets warm, and if they're not stocking it, it's pretty dead. So got to go up north a little bit to where there's, you know, some native species still.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Right on, dude. Well, I think we're probably going to wrap her up here. We're closing in on an hour, so I'm going to shut her down. You got anything you want to share?
Nope. I just want you to start shooting your bow.
And, we'll see. Let me kill one more turkey first.
Well, let me know how you make out in New York, man. Looking forward to hearing about it. So.
Oh yeah, you know, I'll keep you posted. Right on. Well, we're gonna wrap her up here. Y'all have a good week, and we'll see you on the next one.
See ya.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway, to the mountains, or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.